I think it's good for democracy.
I'd like to see the greener issues.
The issues would be for the homeless and the farmers.
Well, they have done something, but they haven't done enough.
There's a few of them need to be turfed out, I think. Hello, you're very well live, Mary. So we're live on air and I'm saying hello and you're very welcome to the Europolitics podcast, coming to you from the very quiet corridors of Leinster House. It's the day after the first leaders' debate. Campaigning continues in election 2020 with me, Mary Regan, and Micheál Lehane, and Paul Cunningham will be joining us presently. The question of the day, I suppose, Mary, is the return of auction politics or not?
Yeah, quite the stellar lineup of economists on the front page of the Irish Times today. Stephen Kinsler, Brian Lucey, Dermot O'Leary, Colin McCarthy, all more or less saying the same thing, that we're going back to the bad old days, back to the old habits of auction politics. And of course, all of us have been attending press conferences every single day where all sorts of policies are being announced in all sorts of areas. And what we're hearing is that they're fully costed, and we'll get the full breakdown once the manifestos or the financial plans are launched. And what they seem to be basing it on is, you know, this terrible word, I'm sorry to bring it into this discussion, but the whole fiscal space.
Oh.
Yeah, sorry, okay. It's out there, it's out there already. But 11 billion is what there will be. Unallocated resources, sorry, I think that's the new fiscal space.
No, that's an estimate, as Stephen Kinsler told us on the news at one today. It's only an estimate,
could
and that's
more,
presuming the
be
weather
more.
Could be sunny
but
all
gives,
the way.
It gives politicians it gives politicians a sum which they can aim towards in order to promise us the sun, moon and stars, 11 billion worth when they get into government.
Stephen Kinsler telling us that there may be no votes on what economists say during a campaign, Micheál, because they're the politician. And there are, you know, people feel that they want something back and all of that when they're casting their votes. But they're the ones you have to listen to the morning after the election to tell you how to pay for everything you've promised.
Yeah. There's a few things, though, I suppose. In the aftermath of that last big cabinet meeting up in Marino, I mean, the then finance minister, still finance minister, but in acting capacity now, Pascal Donoghue came out and he spoke about the world was going to change very soon. Yes, there might even be more than the 11 billion and they were going to revise upwards some of the forecasts, but the OECD very soon were going to make big changes in relation to corporation tax. And he cast himself in an almost Ernest Blythe type role, saying that if he were to continue in this job, things would be very stringent indeed, and there would have to be surpluses to make sure that everything would be there to cope with that change, particularly around Brexit and around changes to corporation tax. And then just a few days later, everything changed, everything from baby boxes to not paying hospital charges for under 16s, dental care, and all the parties were doing it. Everything changed suddenly. At the same time, is there something factored in there among the politicians and among the electorate that you will have coalition talks and ultimately the manifestos, and we make a big deal of them? Regina Doherty said no one reads them, but people do pay attention to them during a campaign. They do fall to the side somewhat when you get into coalition talks. And then there is the fact as well that the European Commission ultimately will have to rubber stamp budgets by the next government. And does it come back to the thing that Pat Brabant never said, that that's what you do during elections? This is what politicians do.
As you said, he
the
never
thing
said.
He never said.
Paul Cunningham, it's interesting as well because all of these promises are being made on the premise that the political parties will be in a position to deliver. And it's picking up on that point Micheál was making there. So, you know, it's going to be a long way to add up to 80, isn't it, for all of these groupings?
Yeah, I think that what's interesting at the moment is that most of the parties are optimistic. They all think they can. So if you're looking at Labour, there's a confidence there that they can pick up stuff. You know, Brendan Howland down in Cork, North Central, very much feeling that there's one to win there. And the Greens equally believe they're confident. They're sort of aiming at 9 or 10, but not ruling out the possibility of higher double digits if the Green wave.
For every team in the Munster Hurling Championship, bar Kerry, I think they can win as well at this moment.
Wouldn't mention anything about Kerry now. But, you know, at some point in the campaign, things turn. And at that stage, people begin to maybe feel that things aren't going as close. So we're just going to have to be able to make that calculation, because the big discussion about the grand coalition and all that type of stuff is nearly putting the cart before the horse. You know, policy first, then you see where you have the numbers, then you get into discussions about what part of your manifesto you're going to jettison. That's the hop, skip, jump.
I thought the grand coalition thing kind of in some ways seemed to come out of nowhere, but there was some murmurings, even though it was denied and the message coming out of HQ in Fine Gael was there is absolutely no possibility of any coalition with Sinn Féin ever. And that was the message. But privately, some at a certain rank were saying maybe things could go that way. By now, putting the option of a grand coalition as the next step, mm-hmm. if early talks fails before any possibility of Sinn Féin, I think that's what's at play from Leo Varadkar in that this particular pitch.
The people have spoken.
But just on that,
and
Mary,
it's the last
on the debate last night, this, you know, hour and a half of three men in a room in front of a lectern, how much did Sinn Féin lose by not being there?
I don't think Sinn Féin really lost anything by not being there. And I think maybe this was part of what Leo Varadkar, it was very interesting that he got that concept of the Grand Coalition in 8 minutes into the debate, seemingly not really prompted, you know. So he was clear that he wanted to get it out there during the course of this debate. And by doing so, I think he pulled the rug from under Micheál Martin in terms of Micheál Martin's main argument, which is that his party represents the party of change. That's what Fianna Fáil is trying to sell.
He was quick to rule it out today, wasn't he?
Yeah. So Fianna Fáil has sensed there's a mood for change out there, but their task is just to convince voters that they are the representative of that change. That's what Micheál Martin was trying to do in the debate last night. But by entering this grand coalition, I think Leo Varadkar was trying to say to voters maybe a vote for Fianna Fáil isn't really a vote for change in that respect. And, you know, that is a gift in some ways to Sinn Féin, because Sinn Féin watching on can say, look, these two are they're standing up together, not a huge amount of policy differences between them, they would say, and they're talking, there's talk about Grand Coalition together already, so if you want change, we're the party of change.
I think it was good for Sinn Féin though, to a certain extent, they're able to point to the television and say, establishment parties, the two of them, look at them, and to define themselves as being those outsiders, those people who are real change, you want to get something done, we're the ones, because it's Tweedledum and Tweedledee. So it plays to a certain extent into their campaign.
And it'll be interesting, based on the Irish Times poll earlier in this week, about 75% wanting change. It'll be interesting to see.
We're playing this game suggesting into polls.
But it'll be interesting to see whether that stays consistent throughout the campaign.
Absolutely.
And whether, because Micheál, again, you were pointing out the RTE exit poll. A lot of people don't make up their minds to the last minute, the last few days.
Yeah, a huge amount. And we do know there's about 20% still undecided. What the politicians, when they're out canvassing, kind of can't really get a gauge on at the moment is there is that degree of politeness, which is kind of an unnerving thing. And many parties are getting that. So have people made their minds up already, which would be at odds with our research up to now? Or have they really yet to engage with this election campaign? And it could be the latter.
The other take from the debate, the drugs don't work?
Well, I actually I have to confess that I didn't watch the debate live. I was down in the cinema, local cinema, watching 1917.
Was it any good?
About 10 minutes into it, I wish I had not gone to the cinema. It was like a mix-up between Saving Private Ryan plus Gallipoli plus like sort of this tired old thing. The dialogue was awful. Anyway, so after 10 minutes, I wanted to get out. I was nearly shouting at the screen to the German soldiers, he's hiding behind the wall. Let's get this over and done with. But I felt that after watching it later on, that it was sort of one of those moments. It became quickly on social media. It was the moment. And Leo Varadkar's delay in answering, which to a certain extent raised a question, given that he had answered the question before in Drogheda a few days earlier, competently and quickly, why he was befuddled when Pat Kenny put the question to him, and particularly because Micheál Martin answered first. So it was a little air of confusion. I think it is something, because of the way he answered, that it will continue. It's continuing today and will roll on to the weekend, no doubt.
And the pensions still don't work either?
No, I mean, that's lingering there. The party's trying to get a clear line on it, and I suppose they have to some extent, but you can see SIP2 getting involved in this campaign now as well, and it is something that continues to and will for several days more, I think.
And of course the issue of pensions being paid to politicians compared with people having to work, you know, the prospect of them working longer or having less money for the early years after their retirement, Mary, that's also been highlighted this week.
Yeah, you know, this is something that came up, I remember, in the 2011 general election campaign, the outgoing Fianna Fáil government. There was an awful lot of them stepping out of politics at that time, a big clear out of Fianna Fáil. ministers and TDs and their pensions that they were getting and leaving office was a big issue and it really angered people. This time, you know, it's not so much a story, but it's just in the context of this, you know, what most private sector workers are facing, these pension changes. But as we pointed out in this podcast and also on our online analysis on Monday, that many public sector workers aren't subject to these changes. Politicians who joined service before 2014 are not subject to this change. And any politician who's there since 2004, which some of them are, can get their pension at 50. So I think that is something that will, it's been highlighted in the papers this morning and yesterday, but I think it is something that it's just a contrast that is really, you know, not going to sit very easily with people, I think.
It'll be interesting to see how the whole pensions question gets dealt with in any programme for government negotiation, won't it? Can you hear a review coming on?
Well, I thought it was just Micheál was talking about pensions on the 1 o'clock television news, and it was rather interesting to see that the SIP2 had got this big sign on the back of a truck, and it just happened to pass the television camera just at the time Micheál was on TV. And certainly people think there's an awful lot of play in it. Mm-hmm. So I think it is going to continue for some time yet.
And given the glances that have been made at Brendan Howland, you know, and given the key demand that Labour have put on that, saying that it shouldn't go beyond 66, there seems to be no way of avoiding it being quite a difficult negotiation point.
Yes, you can see that one being quite sticky.
And of course, Brendan Howland was the one who spotted this before anyone, according to Micheál Martin. The wise Brendan Howland, flagged there by someone who spoke even warmer than him, about him than Leo Varadkar did.
Yes,
Leo
Varadkar, but there's a lot of discussion about who really can claim to be, or nobody's wanting to claim credit for, who's disputing claiming credit for being the author of this policy.
Indeed. I mean, I suppose it does go back to the Troika Agreement, doesn't it, in December 2010, signed by the Fianna Fáil-led government, and the Greens were there as well. So that is the starting point. Then the legislation that follows is the Labour Fine Gael government. So they all have ownership.
But not everything that the Troika wanted was ever delivered. You know, things like legal services.
Yeah.
You know, somehow it just never happened.
There's an issue that hasn't had much traction in this campaign so far. We dealt with it on The Week in Politics at the very late time of 11:20 on RTE1 last night. But it's the issue of the environment. And one thing that was seemed to me, Paul, from the discussion, quite clear is that having missed our 2020 carbon reducing targets, we're supposed to cut it by a third by 2030. Chances of close to zero, unless we have some pretty radical miracles happening in this country in the
and
next
sadly,
while.
That is our record. I mean, it was the Taoiseach himself in the European Parliament who stood up and described Ireland as a laggard. And it was Professor John Sweeney of NUI Maynooth who years earlier on Morning Ireland described Ireland as delinquent. And when you have been a delinquent, not just for a year, but for many years, then, you know, as the bar rises, the challenge gets higher and higher. So we're starting from a very bad place. And one wouldn't be convinced at the moment that the political will is there to deal with it.
But speaking of, you know, things that could eat into that 11 billion fiscal space that the next government might have, even 12 million
could be more, yeah.
On a particularly sunny day. This whole question of how we make the transition. Cian McCormack was talking to a voter in Urlingford in County Kilkenny today. She said, I can't afford climate change. So that there's going to have to be a lot of money that will go in, not to just making the change, but to compensating people for the pain of change.
Well,
and nobody's talking about those bills right now.
But if you talk to, say, for example, some of the Green Party members, they say that issues of climate change are usually framed in a negative. You can't have this and you can't do that and you have to pay more for this. But that if you look at their policies in the range, most of it is to do with social things that we would like to do. Look at the, commuter suburbs. You're talking about transport, you know, public transport, roads over rail. All of these issues, if you're talking about refurbishing of homes, absolutely, you're talking about making your home warmer and having lower bills. These policies make sense. And what you need to do is to be able to capitalise on it and do it in a way in which it means there's a win-win. And so when it comes to things like the green tax, what the Green Party argues is that what you should do is give the money back to the individual who acts in the right way. But what you have to be able to do, I think what we've seen in Irish politics before, is that if you're trying to make a seismic change like this, you have to bring everyone with you. It can't be an urban solution. It has to bring rural Ireland into it as well.
And it's also about bringing the Green Party membership with you, if that, for instance, is to happen, that the Green Party is to be part of the next government. And not all Green members, certainly not all Green candidates, of the view that that would be a good idea.
No, clearly, and we've heard from some of them out west already, And we remember too when the Greens were in government, not alone like did they negotiate to go in and did a conference, but then they had these kind of midterm reviews as well, kind of torturous, tearing themselves apart for the day. So it will be difficult. Again, you do feel the way that Fianna Fáil speak about the Greens now compared to Leo Varadkar, he's coming to this quite late. And do you remember that fairly pointed barb from Eamon Ryan the day Leo Varadkar became Taoiseach, when he said, despite the jogging, despite the smashed avocado, there isn't a green bone in your body, Leo?
No, it was something that's scintilla.
Scintilla, yeah. Is it?
Was, yeah.
Okay.
A scintilla of green in you.
Yeah. Well, we look it up now, I think.
Yeah. 5 year okay.
So come here to me, what's your take? Saturday, fortnight? What's your take of where we're at this stage of the campaign?
I think there, apart from the pension issue, there isn't a lot of engagement. There is a suspicion, and that would be backed up by the Irish Times 75% figure suggesting that there is an appetite for change. But are people, have they made their minds up on what particular horse they're going to bet for that change?
Mary?
Yeah, that would be my assessment from talking to people as well, is just it's kind of a fascinating race at this point, even though people aren't really that engaged. That's what a lot of them are saying at this point. It still seems kind of wide open and, you know, all to play for. And I think a big question that's going to emerge increasingly throughout the campaign is this, what Micheál Martin called last time around, coalition-ology, because people are going to look at who they're going to vote for. And, you know, is the whole a repeat of a minority government and confidence and supply or some version of it, is that going to be the new norm after this election? Or will voter minds kind of focus more now on a more straight decision of who they want as leader?
Of course, Irish voters are the most sophisticated in the world, isn't that what politicians say? So.
Along with our correspondents. Paul, your take on where we're at?
Most of what I would have thought has already been said. I guess one thing, just I was talking to a number of Fine Gael TDs, and they feel that they're on the fight back, that the debate was part of that. And they're hoping very much so that people may have been enticed by that issue of change. But as the weeks go on and the days close out, that people will come back to choice rather than change, and they'll row back towards Fine Gael. That's what they're hoping for.
But you start to look around the constituencies and it starts to look tighter and tighter and tighter for all of them. So I don't know if it's the same for any of you, but I've been surprised by the number of politicians I've met the past week who've been saying, we'll be back at this in 12 to 18 months. They have a sense that this election may not resolve the questions decisively of the direction the country wants to go.
Yeah, if you look at what Micheál Martin said today, speaking about that, that he doesn't believe in collapsing governments or going for swift elections. Leo Varadkar too saying today, if you look in other countries, when you do go for those quick successive elections, that the results don't really change. And I suppose when they did manage to find their way into the concept and embrace it in Jim O'Callaghan's kitchen of confidence and supply, it would say that the appetite is there to do anything but have an election. They still seem marked by what happened in the early 80s. The political system still defined by that in some ways, and a keen sense to avoid it.
Long time ago, isn't that ancient history, Mary?
And it seems like the default position, because, you know, the options are someone reaching 80 seats, you know, those days are gone. The other option is 80 seats with, you know, other groups, you know, Labour, be it Greens or Labour, mm-hmm. whatever. You're still a long way off. It's still a big ask. And then it comes down to, you know, grand coalition. Will they talk about that, or will they, how long will they talk about it for? Then you're the Sinn Féin option, and if all those options are ruled out, then it's the same again. It's confidence and supply in a minority government.
And I mean, it could, even you're getting into government formation, it's a long way off. But the Greens, and if you're looking at the bloc, the more solid bloc of independents, if you need some of them, are most likely to be rural independents. And that could present difficulties if any moves are being made on the climate action side. It definitely would delay.
And of course, they're not getting a lot of traction, I suppose, in the national debate that's going on, but they'd be very significant in their own constituencies.
Yeah, and it is the rural independent who were TDs in the last Dáil who look the best place to retain seats rather than people in urban areas. That's very evident.
And just adding to all that, the Brexit glue which held the last government together is dissipating.
You're all so cheerful, aren't you?
We're just looking forward to a second election in 1 year.
What do we have to look forward to this weekend? What do the parties have coming up for us?
Well, the big one is we're due to have these manifesto launches. We don't have times, but it looks as if Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil are going to do their launches tomorrow. We've got the Green manifesto launch coming up on Sunday. We've got some big media, on Saturday, and some big media interviews on Sunday. So it's galloping apace now.
And an opinion poll, a snapshot in time, only a snapshot in time.
Suggested.
Sunday Business Post.
Suggested.
Let's see. The most consistent poll we always say we cling to, because it's the tracker one, and that's the one the parties look to as well.
Will we call you Micheál Snapshot in Time, Lehan, from now on? All right. Well, that's about it from us for today. Thank you to Colm O'Mungon on production. And of course, more from Your Politics on the campaign tomorrow, keeping you up to date with whatever's going to happen on Friday. As Paul was saying, it promises to be a busy day. Thank you for listening and talk to you soon.